Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Guest today. You may have heard him on the Wrestling Observer shows with Brian and Dave. He's also the he also wrote the book Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, History on Montreal Wrestling. And he's also writing a book that I'm very excited about the history of women's wrestling. And please welcome to the show, Pat LaPrade.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
Very good. Very good. This is probably the longest intro I've heard on a radio show in a very long time. I really liked it.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Thank you. One of my co-hosts, he actually made that. He's running late, so he may or may not join us for the interview. And unfortunately, my other co-host, Craig, has family issues, and he's unable to do the show. So for right now, it's going to be me and you. And Pat, before we get into the interview, for those who are unfamiliar with you, please give everyone like a brief summary of who you are and how you decided to become to write books on pro wrestling and just being involved in pro wrestling in general.
Sure, sure. I mean, I've been a fan since I'm 6 years old. I'm now 38, so it's been quite a while. I've been involved on the local scene here in Montreal for the past 14 years. And I was working for a promotion run by a former wrestler named Paul LeDuc, the fake brother of Joe LeDuc. I started doing a magazine on the local scene, pretty much like the PWI Almanac. It was a once-a-year deal with, you know, recapping the whole year on the indie scene. And I created the very first Quebec Wrestling Hall of Fame along with this. So Paul LeDuc, you know, he put me in touch with a lot of former wrestlers like Gino Brito and Mad Dog Vachon and Raymond Rougeau. So I was able, you know, to get in touch with all those guys, and they were very, very nice and, you know, very into the project, and they still vote. I mean, unfortunately, we have lost the dog, but Ray and Gino and Paul are still voting for the Hall of Fame. So for the fifth anniversary of the Almanac, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to add top 25 of the best Quebec wrestlers of all time. So I was looking to get some help to write the bios that I wanted to do, because it was, you know, both French and English. And there's a guy who was the publicist for IWS promotion here in Montreal. His name was Michael Lacour Ryan. And he came up with the idea of actually doing more than just bios, but to do but to do, you know, stories about other stuff than just the bios, you know, stuff about the wrestlers, you know, matches, important matches, or, you know, stuff on you know, side stories about Quebec wrestling. And we started doing interviews with the wrestlers. And, you know, before we knew it, we were writing a book on the history of Montreal wrestling. Unfortunately, Michael had to give up the project because he was too busy with his work. So that's when I went to get another person was really, really involved in Quebec wrestling for a long time, Bertrand Hébert. We ended up doing the book, you know, the both of us. And the funny thing about it is that, you know, it's Montreal wrestling, Quebec wrestling, and we're not able to get a deal in French first. No editors wanted to give us a chance because you know, local wrestling is not on TV anymore for a long, long time. They just thought that, you know, wrestling was dead in Montreal and they wouldn't make any money out of that kind of book. We strongly disagreed, but, you know, what can we do? So we turned to ECW Press and Michael Holmes, who, as you know, published, you know, a lot of books on wrestling. So he was really behind the idea. And it's only after publishing the book in English that there's a French editor who actually contacted us for a French version. And it actually was a bestseller in the province of Quebec. So, I mean, that's pretty much how we ended up. I ended up writing books, and then from that book on Montreal history, we did the biography of Maurice Mad Dog Vachon, which will be in English. That one we were able to get in French first, and it will be in English probably a year from now. So. So yeah, it's pretty amazing actually. You know, I really didn't think I was going to go that way. And I've been involved in pro wrestling in the province on different, you know, different roles. You know, I've ring announced, I've refereed, I've managed, you know, worked backstage promoter. When Ring of Honor came to Montreal, actually I was the local promoter, you know, both times they came. And, you know, I've done pretty much everything on the local scene in pro wrestling. And but I really think that, you know, writing books is something that I really, really enjoy now. And like you said, you know, I'm now working on a book on women's wrestling history. And you know, I don't see the day where I'm going to, and, you know, writing. And I'm doing also articles on Slam Wrestling and on a French website that we have here covering pro wrestling. So pretty much involved. You know, it's taking all my free time these days.
Now, I just recently saw you. I think I met you for the second time just a couple weeks ago at the Shimmer Shows in Chicago. And I wanted to ask you, how did you enjoy the Shimmer Shows? And any thoughts on any of the things that happened on the shows?
Yeah, you know, as always, you know, it's you know, it's where you can find the best women's wrestling. Even if, you know, NXT is doing pretty good with women's wrestling. I mean, Shimmer is always special. You know, I always enjoy those weekends. The first day of taping was, I don't know, different from what we usually see, you know, because probably, you know, it was rushed a little bit more because of the change of venue and you know, the last minute thing with this, which is not, you know, Dave Prezak or the promotion's fault at all. But, you know, it was a different vibe, you know, and although there were, you know, a few good things on both of the shows, I don't know. I really thought that the second day was much, much, much better because it was, I believe it was, you know, just a normal day of taping. You know, it wasn't rushed into a 5-hour thing with no intermission, with shorter matches to make sure that the show was going to be finished on time. Actually, taping volume 78 was probably my favorite. You know, very, very good matches from Kelly Skater and Kato, and from Courtney Rush and Liberty, and I really enjoyed the tag match with Melissa and Yumi Oma against Matsumoto and Makoto, and of course Madison Eagles and Nicole Savoy. I mean, Nicole Savoy had a breakout weekend to me. I've seen her the year before, and I was really impressed with her work, with the way she presents herself in the ring. You know, she has that cockiness, that face when she looks at you, you know, and she's a very, very good heel. And I think, you know, it was a heck of a weekend for her. The Eagles match was very good, but the match with Evie on Volume 7-7 and her match also with Kato on Volume 79. I mean, she really had a great weekend. My superstar of the weekend, if I would have to choose one. You know, and Volume 79, I mean, the main event was, you know, was special. You know, it was both 10-year anniversary match and Porsche retirement match. So it was really special to see the crowd reaction for girls like Lexi that, you know, we didn't see wrestle there in a long time. And for Lacey and, of course, you know, Daisy Hayes, who hasn't wrestled in a long time too. So no, I mean, it was a very, very cool weekend. You know, yeah, basically.
Well, one of the people that really, really impressed me and was Kellyanne from Australia, Atlanta Storm student. I thought she had, in my mind, one of the all four matches were great, but I think her match with Kaylee Ray, I kind of have it as like top two or three in my personal top matches from the weekend. She's very young, 22. What did you think of her and her impact on making an impression on her first?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's she has a great look. You know, she doubled that with a very good work rate. I mean, those girls from Andlin in Australia usually, you know, since I'm going to Shimmer shows, you know, I've discovered a lot of talent. And you can see, you know, Australians and the Brits are, you know, they come in with a different way of doing things, a different way of wrestling, and it's always, you know, and the Joshis as well. You know, I like those Shimmer weekend, you know, because you see talent that you don't see everywhere else, you know, and that's the fun part of it, you know. And over the years, I've discovered so many talent. I mean, just look at who's on NXT right now, you know. Paige was you know, was on Shimmer shows. You know, she was there on my first Shimmer weekend, actually, and Casey Cassidy and Jesse McKay. And you know, the weekend, the 2 days before Shimmer, you had, you know, Evie and Shazza and Kaylee Ray working the NXT taping. So it's fun to see those talents. And discover new talent, actually, going to Shimmer shows, and definitely Kellyanne was one of them. Yeah,
and like one of the big storylines, or actually it was actually kind of two storylines that intermingled throughout the weekend, and it was basically the ending of two storylines, and one is the feud of Madison Eagles and Nicole Matthews, and then also adds to the retirement of Portia Perez and how that all intertwined. What can you? I know she's from Canada. I don't know how familiar you are, but what can you tell us about the career of Portia Perez? Because it is pretty sad that she had to retire on the terms that she did because of an injury and the doctor telling her that she couldn't wrestle. She's been a mainstay in Shimmer for a very long time. I mean, I think she started when she was 15 or something. What can you tell us?
I've seen Portia wrestle when she was only 16, I believe. And it's funny because I actually told her that over the weekend at SMN. I've seen you wrestle when you were 16, looking like a 16 years old, and now you're 30 years old, and you're still looking like a 16 years old. and I mean, you know, yeah, I've known Portia. She was working for CPW, small promotion in Hull, which is just, you know, the other side of the river from the nation's capital, Ottawa, but on the Quebec side. And you know, she was just starting. I remember working with Lufisto at the time, and with some other local talent. And yeah, I mean, what I like the most about Porsche last weekend, well, not last weekend, but last summer weekend, was the way she ended her career, in the sense that she didn't do it in, you know, in your typical way where, you know, you're being in doubt the microphone and you're just, you know, you thank the fans, you thank, you know, your parents and, you know, the whole world. She took the mic and she simply said, you know, you guys suck. And she got that reaction too, you know, well, you suck too. And I just thought it was like the funniest thing ever. And I would have actually been pissed if Porsche would have ended her career, you know, in you know, just a typical way of usually how people will finish that kind of match. So it was, you know, she was Porsche till the very, very end. And we had the chance to have her in Montreal a lot of times. I mean, she basically was a mainstay in Montreal for a number of years, working for Femme Fatale, but before that, also working for ALF, which was the first women's promotion in Montreal, and working, you know, a few indies here and there. So, yeah, it was a sad moment for a girl like Nicole Matthews, you know, that, you know, she teamed with for so many years, and I'm sure, you know, it was sad for Porsche as well, even though she didn't really show it in front of the crowd. But yeah, I mean, she hopefully stays involved in wrestling or with Shimmer and in other roles. You know, she would be I mean, she's already a very good commentator. She could be you know, any role, like a commissioner kind of role, or, you know, a manager or something. You know, she has the mic work to and the charisma to actually do that.
I watched I wasn't inside the place when they did the Q&A, but I watched the Q&A, and she was talking about some of the things that she does as far as helping out. And she told a funny story about how Dave got mad at her because she was throwing furniture around in the back because she'd get so involved in stuff. I mean, I thought that was a really funny story. So yeah, I can see her being, you know, like a kind of like an agent backstage, and like you say, commentary. She is a very funny commentary. I mean, she's actually very, very good. And
there's actually a lot of, and I don't know how your listeners know about that, but there's actually a lot of girls coming from Canada on you know, a regular Shimmer weekend. You know, Lufisto is one of them. Cherry Bomb is Canadian. Nicole Matthews, Xandra Bale, Casey Spinelli, Vanessa Craven.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of Canadian women's wrestlers, and there's always been, you know, before that, you know, and then Natalia worked Shimmer a few times, and Calamity worked Shimmer as well. I mean, there's always been, you know, Canadian women's around, and, you know, that's something that we're all really proud of. When you look at the lineup, and, you know, we talk about the Brits and the Aussies and the Joshis. I mean, Canadian girls are a mainstay in Shimmer, and, you know, hopefully it's gonna stay that way.
I would love to see a show that's kind of like the. Kind of like a World Cup kind of a theme, where you have your team from Canada, with the people you mentioned, a team with the top U.S. Indie. You could go to you'd have a top Europe team with, like, Rhea O'Reilly, Kaylee Ray. You'd have a big Australian team. And then, you, of course, you know, the Japanese team. And there's so many that you could pick on that team. I would love to see, like, maybe, like, five from each country or six or something, and then just have like a series of matches. And I think that would be like an incredible kind of a theme show. I mean, that would be incredible.
If it's not the TNE people, you know, booking it, I would be down for it. Yeah. but I mean, yeah, there's a promotion in Canada, in Toronto, who Smash Wrestling, who actually every year does Canada versus USA, women's not tournament. Well, yeah, I think it's kind of a tournament, and it's, you know, Team Canada against Team USA, and it's not a tournament, but it's a just, you know, a series of matches with a winner, you know, with Canada, you know, if a Canadian teams score a win, well, they get a point, and, you know, there's stuff like that. And it's very interesting, actually. And, yeah, I mean, Schemmer has, you know, all the talent from all over the world. So World Cup kind of thing would be a good idea. The only thing is that, you know, since they're running only 2 weekends per year, you know, that would have to take probably a full day of taping or even more. So that's, you know, that maybe screws up your storylines and stuff. But, you know, on a spot show or something, sometimes, you know, maybe on a Mania weekend or something, that could be a nice thing to do.
Yeah, phrase like, if you're listening, book it. WrestleMania weekend, Schemmer, Women's World Cup. But I'd like to transition to the book you're writing now, The History of Women's Wrestling. So I'm sure you're doing an extensive search on Bayou on a lot of the older women wrestlers, just besides the ones of today. And it's also Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame time. And I know there's a few Japanese women who are in the Hall of Fame, and I believe the only American or North American woman is Mildred Burke. I think Mula is even off the list, and I think June Bynors might be the only one on the list. I'm one of the ones that feel that kind of Mula should be in. Doing all the research that you've done, do you feel any women from North America, either U.S. or Canada, should be in the Hall of Fame that's been kind of excluded for whatever reason? I feel there's bias toward the women wrestlers that I just feel that the male voters just have a bias against women's wrestling, and that's why they don't vote for them. And what's your opinion now that since you're doing such research, and I'm sure you know who did what, you know, writing this book?
Mula is, I mean, honestly, I've been voting myself for Mula even before starting working on the book. And I know a lot of people don't agree, you know, because her work rate wasn't at a top level, but she was so influential and sometimes in a bad way. Okay. But she was so influential in women's wrestling for so many years, and she got so many girls, you know, in the business and there's, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, surrounding Mula, you know, and you know, stiffing the girls on pays and you know, being very very hard on her girls. It was. I mean, there's so many stories of women working for Mula that wish they would, you know, never met her to begin with. But at the same time, she was the face of women's wrestling for so many years, up until the Hogan era, the rock and wrestling era. That, you know, if you remember correctly, the first special that WWE got was on MTV, and it was, you know, a women's match. It was, you know, Wendy Richter. And winning the women's title from Fabulous Moolah. So I mean, she was still involved in the 80s. You know, she was in the cartoon. You know, the rock and wrestling Hogan cartoon. You know, she was still very much involved, even though she was, you know, at the very end of her career. So, you know, if you combine both her as a wrestler and as, you know, let's call her a promoter or an agent or a booker or whatever you want to call her. I mean, I do believe she has, you know, the credentials to actually be in the Hall of Fame. And she's not. I do believe that there's a lot of, you know, older wrestlers that, you know, will never vote for a woman because they see women's wrestling completely differently from men's wrestling, and it takes a lot for them to actually change their mind. You know, as far as other women, that's a tough question because, you know, if Mula is not in, I don't see it, you know, if you, well, I don't agree that she shouldn't be in, but, you know, she's not in. So if she's not in, I don't see any girls from her era getting in before her. So mm-hmm. so where that leads us to Trish and Lita, I don't see them being ever considered in the Hall of Fame. So I mean, and then you know it's today's era. You know, maybe
yeah.
in 20 years from now, we'll see someone like a Paige or Charlotte, or you know if that Divas Revolution is really happening one day, because I don't think it you know I don't think it even started yet. I don't know, maybe, but right now it's called. I honestly don't see, based on the fact that Moolah is not in, I really don't see any other women getting in. And I'm very curious to see how June Byers did this year on the ballots, because that's going to be very telling on that question on who you know will be in one day if there is any.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how far are you from being finished with the book?
Not that much, actually. We have maybe, because I'm running it with Dan Murphy from the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, who's in charge of the, among other things, of the PWI 500 and the female top 50 for a number of years now. I'd say that we are about maybe 30 to 40% done with the writing. But all the research is pretty much done. We still have some interviews to do. But you know, that's, you know, me and Dan are able to write on a somewhat fast pace. So we're not really worried about that, because we want to make sure that we take our time, that we, you know, we do things right. I mean, it's a book that should get about, I don't know, 90,000 words, pictures, obviously. So it's going to be a good mix of all that. We're going back to the Cora Livingstone and Cora Combs. And all, you know, the girls from the start of the century, to, of course, you know, Mildred Burke and Joan Byers and Moolah and Penny Banner, and, you know, all the way to the Vivienne Vachon and Luna Vachon, obviously, and the girls from the 80s, Wendy Richter and Leilani Kai and all those ones, up until today. So we're going to be talking also about the Trish and Litas and you know the Bellas. I mean, we want to make sure that we talk about women's wrestlers and not women in wrestling. But you know, even though everyone has an opinion on the Divas, we have to talk about some of them, obviously, because you know they've been on TV and they've been there for so many years that you know we have to talk about at least some of them, you know. But we don't want to talk about Valet or really barely mention them, or it's really like, you know, women's wrestlers. I want to talk about a few other topics too, you know. And we've did a bunch of interviews at Shimmer, especially on those matters, in the sense that we want to talk about men versus women, you know, anything related to women's wrestling, actually. And that includes, you know, how do you see intergender matches? How do you see that, especially in 2015, when there's so much talk about violence, you know, about men and women and violence, you know, with all those, you know, athletes getting suspended from the league or from their team for violence, you know, and hitting their girlfriend and stuff like that. So, I mean, is it still, you know, something that is okay to see intergender matches in 2015, or it's something that should be, you know, slowly getting rid of, you know, and why the girls want to fight or to wrestle, I should say, men, you know, why is it important for them? Because pretty much every girl today who's wrestling at some point will wrestle men as well, you know. So why is it important? So we want to get into that. We want to get into the sexualization of women's wrestling. Is it important to be pretty? Is it important to be sexy? Because, you know, there's that debate in the sense that girls working shimmer shows are there because of their work rate. And that's all right, because that's what we want to see. We want to see women's wrestling. We don't want to see bra and panties matches, you know. But at the same time, when you look at the merchandise they're selling, they won't sell pictures of them in a snowsuit. You understand? They will sell, you know, they will use their advantage to sell pictures and stuff like that. So we want to talk about that because, you know, that's I believe, more relevant to women's wrestling than to men's wrestling.
Well,
we don't make... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of that subject, because it's kind of funny that you brought that up, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but I actually caused a little commotion with a couple of wrestling personalities who went on social media, and they never said my name, but they bashed me because they saw I was taking photos at the show, and I will admit to being... having fun and being a guy and taking a couple of butt shots. And not a lot, just there was a few of them that were in mixed with my other pictures. And a bunch of people got very, not the women, but I'm talking a couple guys who were just in the business, got very offended at that. And, you know, I wasn't thinking I was having fun. I hope I didn't offend the women that I might have posted a photo of like that. But it wasn't my intent to offend anyone or like take away from the wrestling, because I did go there for the wrestling. Like you say, some of them are very attractive and I do like, you know, attractive women. And what are your thoughts on something like that? Like on someone going to Shimmer and yes, they went for the wrestling, but they may have took a butt shot, you know, given the opportunity, you know, what is your thoughts on that?
It's a fine line between going to Shimmer show and enjoying the wrestling and also finding the girls very attractive, but there's a fine line between that and lacking respect to girls. And I'm not saying that's what you did. I didn't see the shots, but I mean the line is fine, and that's something. See, that's the kind of questions we want to ask. The women will be interviewing from any era, because I mean it's always been like this. You know, Penny Banner was in the 60s and the 70s, you know, posing in you know small bikinis in a time where you know it wasn't what it is today. It wasn't as accepted as today. You know, mm-hmm. So there's stuff like that, and the line is fine. The line is really thin between all this and it's. Like I said, it's really more a matter for women than it is for men. Men is, I mean, they're there in their batting suit for almost, you know, like if they were in a batting suit and that's all they wear and nobody is really making a big deal out of it, even though, you know, a guy like Randy Orton has plenty of fans, you know, of women's fans because of that, because he has, you know, he shows a lot of his body and he looks good. But a woman will be seen differently. And that's the kind of question we asked some of the girls we actually interviewed over the weekend to see, you know, what is their take on it, you know, how they deal with that and you know, why it is important to do those kind of maybe sexy poses, you know, for pictures and stuff. And where is the line between you know, finding, you know, doing a sexy picture and crossing the line to where you don't want to have, you know, a bad reputation of someone who, you know, you, you, there, and I'll go somewhere else. But I mean, like apartment wrestling back in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, that's something that we're going to include in this, talking about how it was done and why it was so criticized. Pretty much like GLOW, you know, GLOW was a lot of critics because it wasn't showing wrestling, it was showing more, you know, of a TNA show. And I'm not talking about Orlando's TNA, I'm talking about TNA. And I mean, you know, that's all kind of stuff that we find interesting to let the women be able to talk about this and to give us their impression. And you know, so far the interviews we're doing, it's more of a big deal for people outside of women's wrestling than for the women themselves.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. To them, they're
not doing worse than what the guys are doing. You know, they're it's a cosmetic business, and at the end of the day, you're gonna do what you have to do to make money. And you know, if you look pretty and you have a good body, well, good for you, and you'll make probably good money, and you'll be able to have a good career if you can double that with a very good work rate. And you know, that's the kind of question we actually ask, you know, and it's really interesting so far to get their take on it. And yeah, so I mean, that's going to be part of the book as well, you know. And yeah, so all matter, like when I was talking about men versus women, that Kimberly against Chris Dickinson thing that went almost viral for a few months ago, where Dickinson on CZW really like beat the shit out of Kimberly. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that word.
Yeah, no. he literally came very close to, in my opinion, almost killing her or even crippling her. I mean, that was to the extreme. Hopefully we won't see much of that. And but,
well,
you know, as
see,
far as intergender, I don't really have a problem with it.
That's a matter that we actually, and we talk about, we talked to Kimberly about that when we were at Shimmer, and I'll be talking to Chris as well and to other women, because, you know, that's the kind of stuff that when I was, you know, saying earlier, you know, is it stuff that we can actually do in 2015? Well, that's the exact example of something that, you know, can we actually do that nowadays, or it should be frowned upon, you know? So yeah, it's going to be plenty of stuff, you know, and you know, of course, you're going to have bios. That's going to be, you know, a small part of the book. It's going to be a chapter or something, but you know, most of the book will be talking about the great women's wrestlers that's been around for many, many years. And it's funny because there's a lot of people, you know, that I talked to who are not that knowledgeable about history of women's wrestling or history of wrestling period. And when I was telling them I was doing a women's book, they were like, oh, okay, that's good. But, I mean, you know, history is shorter. And I was like, no. I mean, there were women's wrestlers back in the early 1900s, which is pretty much, you know, more than 100 years ago. So the history is very, very, there's a very rich history of women's wrestling. And that's what I want to talk about in the book.
You've actually made me more excited for the book than I already was, just on the fact that you are going to talk about controversial subjects and not just, you know, go the easy route and you know, just to go like the happy stories. But we don't have a whole lot of time, so I do want to get to your other book as much as possible. The first thing on your book is Mad Dogs, and that's in reference to Mad Dog Vachon, who's a very legendary wrestler. My favorite Mad Dog story is a story I heard from Jesse Ventura, where he talks about him and Adonis were doing the circuit against Mad Dog and his partner, and they were getting very frustrated because Mad Dog was just beating the crap out of them basically every night.
Mm-hmm.
And during the match, I think Jesse grabbed Mad Dog from behind, and Adonis hit him with a chair so hard that Jesse said that Mad Dog went limp. And they finished the match, and the next day they're in the back, and Mad Dog comes walking straight at him, and they're basically, they clench their fists and get ready for a fight because they think Mad Dog's going to be mad. for the receipt that they gave him, and that Mad Dog just came up to him with the biggest smile and said, "Last night, that was fantastic," and just gave him the thumbs up and was so happy about it. And they were like, they were amazed because they were scared for their life that they were going to get killed because they gave him a receipt. But what can you tell us about the Mad Dog Vachon? A very crazy, legendary guy who actually was not the biggest guy in the world, but was still like considered one of the biggest killers.
Well, he wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but he wasn't billed as a small guy. And that is so important. I mean, the commentators, wherever he was working, but especially the AWA, they were not billing him like a 5'8", hairy, small guy. They were billing him as a crazy guy, a madman, a mad dog, someone from Algeria at the time where there was that big war between Algeria and France. I mean, they were billing him to be that kind of character, that kind of persona where, you know, he's just a madman and the ring is his madhouse in a sense, you know? And I mean, that's what he portrayed in the ring. But the most fascinating thing about Mad Dog is that he was, you know, dirty in the ring, he was vicious, he was aggressive, but in real life, he was the complete opposite. He was a generous, caring guy, always willing to help people. He wasn't good with money, and that generosity wasn't helping him because he could give money away to a hobo. He could give money away to, you know, someone would come to him with an idea, a project, or something. And he would say, yeah, why not? You know, how much does it cost? 10 grand? Okay, let's go. I'm in. And at the end, he would lose that 10 grand. So he wasn't good with money, but he wanted to help people. He wanted to be that kind of man. I mean, he helped so many guys in the business that people don't even know about. I mean, Roddy Piper told us, you know, of course, last year before we unfortunately lost him, he told us that without Mad Dog Vachon, there would be no Roddy Piper. And he wanted to make sure that, you know, when we did his biography, that it was going to be in the book. Pat Patterson said the same thing. If it wasn't for Mad Dog Vachon, there would be no Pat Patterson. Ronnie Goulet, who worked as an agent in WWE for a long, long time after having a tremendous career, said the same thing. He gave Mr. Wrestling's, he gave Tim Woods the Mr. Wrestling gimmick. He gave Jim Raske the Baron Von Raske gimmick. He was very creative and always willing to help people. And that was so fascinating to actually learn about all that when we did his biography. You know, he was really completely different from what he portrayed in the ring. But, you know, he's on the book because, I mean, he's probably one of the best-known wrestler coming from the province of Quebec, in and out the province. And they were actually more than one Mad Dog in Quebec. There were Mad Dog Vachon, of course, but there was another guy named Mad Dog Lefevre, who was working in the 80s, who was one of Raymond Rougeau's best friends. There was Michel Martel, Ricky Martel, Rick Martel's brother, who was called Mad Dog at one point in his career. So there was more than one Mad Dog in Quebec. So, you know, it was a nickname that resonate wrestling to your regular fans. So yeah. Hey, I'm sorry, by the way, if you hear other voices. There's a I'm at an event here, like a sports memorabilia show in Montreal, where we sell, you know, our DVDs and books and stuff, and they're doing a draw right now. So sorry about the noise.
Oh no, it's okay. Very, very little of it's coming through. I've heard very little.
Good.
I know we don't have a whole. How much time do you have? I just so I know how many more questions to ask.
I could have 10 more minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. I'd like to ask, you know, you talked about the Vachons You mentioned the Rougeau brothers. I think a lot of modern fans know the Hart family. What family would you consider the absolute most important in the history of Canadian wrestling? And just thoughts on the major families like the Vachons, the Rougeaus, and the Harts, and anyone that I'm missing.
If you're talking about, you know, Canada as a whole, the Harts are definitely the most important and influential family wrestling-wise that there's ever was. You know, there's, you know, I mean, so many wrestlers coming from that family, from Stu to Natty. I mean, there's a lot. In Montreal, the Hart family for Montreal is definitely the Rougeau. The Rougeaus, I mean, they are, with Jacques Jr.'s son's wrestling, they are the first family to actually get four generation of wrestlers. The only other four generation family are the McMahons, but they were not, you know, wrestlers. They were more, you know, the older generation were promoters. I'm talking like Vince and Steph are wrestlers. They're promoters as well, but they have wrestled too, but not Senior and Jeff. So yeah, the Rougeaus, I mean, they're so important. They're probably, besides the Vachon, and the Rougeaus is probably the name that means wrestling the most in Montreal. You know, even if you young, old, you were a fan or not, if you mention the name Rougeau, it's connected, you know, to wrestling right away.
It's also connected to two of the greatest wrestling theme songs ever.
Yeah, I mean, the All American Boys is a heck of a piece, and it's funny because we were in Quebec City last week at the Quebec City Comic Con, and Ray Rougeau was there with us, and we were talking about that because, you know, he did a Q&A and he was talking about how the song was made, you know, going to Memphis with Jimmy Hart and everything. And I mean, it's such just a great song. And you want to hear something? I'm going to link that to women's wrestling since we have talked about that a lot. About 10 years ago, me and a few other people were running a promotion in Montreal, and Lufisto was involved with the promotion, especially on the media side. People might not know this, but Lufisto is very good, you know, with doing, you know, making videos and all that. And they were a tag team from a small town outside of Montreal named Shawinigan. And we have done for them the all Shawinigan boys. And it was on the same music, but with French lyrics. And it was actually Lufisto singing because she's an actually very good singer, and she was the one singing the French lyrics on that song. So I mean, yeah, it's a great song that people, you know, any wrestling fan has, you know, has heard and probably loved the song as well.
Yeah. And real quick, I want to get into the second part of the title, and that is midgets. And
yeah,
I would assuming the main one would be Sky Low Low, but what can you tell us about the famous midgets of Montreal?
The main one is actually Little Beaver.
Oh,
Little Beaver
okay.
Is probably the most famous midget ever, but Sky Low Low is right next to him.
Okay.
I mean, midgets, why it was in the title, because actually the very first midget wrestling match was all in Montreal at the end of the 1940s. And the promoter of, you know, when midget wrestling really became popular in the early 50s, the promoter was actually Gino Brito's father, Jack Britton, who was from Montreal. And there were so many midget wrestlers who were coming from the province of Quebec, like Chilolo, like Little Beaver. There was also Huey James was from Montreal or the province of Quebec. Tiger Jackson I don't know if you remember Dink, the midget that was with Donk the Clown in the 90s in the WWE,
yes.
Tyler Jackson from Montreal.
Oh, wow.
So I mean, there were a lot of them coming from Montreal, so it just fit, you know, naturally to have midgets on the title, and again, there were more than one, you know, so there's Mad Dogs, midgets, and Screwjobs, obviously, because of the Sean and Brett match, but also because it wasn't the only Screwjob. There was the old Screwjob between Strangler Lewis and Henri Dugan back in 1931, which was the first Montreal Screwjob. So yeah, the title of the book was that concept where, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, which three expression would be more related to the history of Montreal wrestling, and I think we hit the target with those three.
Yeah, it's to me, it's one of my favorite names for any of the wrestling books, because it really sticks out there, and it's just like it's just in a way it's kind of corny, you know, Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs. So it fits perfectly for a wrestling title. I mean, it's just awesome. Real quick, before we go, I want to give you a chance to plug your social medias or any appearances or anything you have coming up. Please feel free.
Well, we talk about it a lot, Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, the whole history of Montreal wrestling, 400 pages, 200 pictures. And you know, if you think it's a regional, territorial book, well, don't think it, don't see it that way, because there's a lot of guys in that book that you know, American fans are aware of, that know of, you know, the Ronnie Garvins and Tarzan the Boot Tyler and Hans Schmidt, all people coming from the province of Quebec. So it's not only the wrestling, it's their story of wrestling in Montreal, but also all the Quebec wrestlers that actually had an international career. We also have our DVDs. Well, the Mad Dogs, the Midgets, and Screwjob books is available through Amazon. The DVDs that we have, we have three volumes, 4 hours each, of the best of Montreal wrestling, the best of the 50s, 70s, and 80s. Really great stuff coming from Montreal. Mad Dog Vachon against Andre the Giant, Mad Dog Vachon against Edouard Carpentier, the Rougeaus against the Road Warriors, Bravo, Dino Bravo against Rick Martel. There's, you know, plenty of goodies in there. The three of them are available at highspots.com and rsvideo.com. And we also have trading cards that we sell through mostly eBay for international customers. So we have made a collection of we're up to 30, more than 40 cards that we've done on the history of Montreal wrestling as well. So if you follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, Prade, LAPRADE, or Bertrand Ebert, both on Facebook and Twitter, you'll find all those links, you know, to get the DVDs, the books, the trading cards as well, and you can check, you know, my articles on Slam Wrestling. You know, write from time to time. Bertrand writes there as well. And as far as appearances, probably that will go in the United States, probably until next year, 2016. I'm usually, you know, I'm at the CAC, the Cauliflower Alley Club in Las Vegas, and we're doing the Amsterdam Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame as well. And Bertrand will be releasing next year the biography, the autobiography of Pat Patterson. That will be an interesting one. I'm not involved with the book, but you know, it's Bertrand's is my business partner, so I might as well plug that as well, because I believe it's going to be a very, very good book, a long-awaited book, actually published by ECW Press, through ECW Press by WWE. there's going to be a very interesting book. So a lot of new books coming up for me and Bertrand. We're really excited about all that.
Regarding Pat Patterson, I personally feel that Pat Patterson is the greatest seller that I've ever seen.
He probably is. Yeah.
He could. Like, let's say they're going to post him on the post outside. He could miss it by 2 feet and make it seem like a more brutal shot than someone who actually rammed someone else's head into the post. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people are talking about, you know, guys like Ricky Morton. And even a guy like Sami Zayn gets a lot of props for their selling, but Pat was one of the all time great, and you know he just knew it was funny because I was reading old Observers, and when you know Pat did that evening gong match with Jerry Briscoe when they were the Stooges. And I mean, you know, the match was nothing, but I remember Dave Meltzer writing something like that, you know, even at his age, Pat could probably outwork anyone, you know, in the promotion at the time. So, I mean, that's very telling of his talent. And he just knew what to do in the ring to get a reaction and what to do in the ring to get a good match. And, you know, he's been Vince's right-hand man for a long, long time. You know, for the longest time, it was, you know, when the boom really came in the 80s, it was Vince and Pat. It was these two doing all the booking and sitting together and making sure that, you know, everything was going accordingly to what they had in mind. And the book will give a very good history of a guy who started, you know, in Montreal, and went to Boston at a very young age without even knowing, you know, he could barely have a discussion in English. He really didn't know English at all and went to Boston and had that fabulous career. And, you know, he's still involved with the WWE, you know, he's still doing some stuff behind the scenes, you know, once in a while. And, one of the most respected guys in the business.
Well, Pat, I appreciate you spending so much time with us. And when the new book comes out, I definitely want to get you back on. I'm very excited for that book. And hope you have a good night. And I'll let you get back to your expo that you're at. So have a good night.
Yeah, because I see Bertrand right now closing the booth by himself. So I'm probably gonna get some heat for that. But thank you very much for having me, and definitely we'll talk when the books get published next year.
Cool. Thank you very much, Pat. You have a good night.
You too, man. Thanks.
Bye bye. Okay, everyone. I think that went well. I'm not sure if Couture is going to be able to call in or not. So if he doesn't call in within the next minute or so, I'm probably just going to cut the show short. And we'll see everybody next week. But there is a WWE pay-per-view this coming weekend. Unfortunately, I can only name probably a few matches without Craig or Couture here to... actually, I think Couture is on the line right now. Couture, are you there?
Yeah, sorry I'm late. It's been raining all day here. It took me longer to get home than I figured, so...
No problem. But... yeah, I think the interview went great, but I mentioned that there's a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view coming up, but I can't tell you what's on the show. Do you have a listing, or do you know what's on the show other than three matches?
Yeah, I got that. I'm pulling up the daily update here. It's got all the matches on it.
Okay.
So let's see. So let's see. On the pre-show, we have... Neville and Dolph Ziggler, Cesaro against Rusev, Sheamus, and King Barrett. I assume whoever didn't win Monday will win this time. So,
probably Neville. I don't think Neville's been winning at all lately. So, hopefully they'll let Neville. Or there could be some interference from a certain Lance Storm student, maybe, and that'll cost the heels to lose. I mean, the faces to lose. Or I don't know. I'm lost. I'm sorry. But, Yeah, I bet that'll be a good match. I mean, they're all good workers. They usually cut the pre-matches kind of short, so it'll probably just be okay. I don't think they're going to give them the time to actually cut loose like the three of them actually could, because, I mean, they, like I say, they really are all good workers, but I think it'll just be good, and, you know.
I never see the pre-show match, so I probably won't see it.
I'll watch them occasionally. They'll never top the that hardcore midget match with El Torito and Hornswoggle. So it's like
the WLC match.
The WLC match. I mean, that's kind of like the pre-show matches jump the shark after that, because nothing will ever compare to that. That's the greatest pre-match, the pre-show match in the history of pro wrestling. I mean, that's still to this day one of my favorite matches of all time.
Next we have Charlotte versus Nikki Bella for the Divas title.
I was almost positive they were going to find a way to add Sasha to the match, but it doesn't seem like that's happening. And it's so weird because it seems like they want to push Sasha, but at the same time they're trying not to push Sasha. And I hope that, and I also see that, you know how, like, okay, basically you had Charlotte and Friends were the faces, and you had Team Bad as the heels, and then you have the Bellas as the tweeners. But now there seems like they're pushing the Bellas as the heels and Team Bad as the faces, which I think is a horrible idea, because Sasha at her best is a heel, and I think that's what will get her over at the start more than being a face. Even though they think, you know, because faces are getting cheered that they're more over, I think the heels can become, when they do turn face, it's better that because they were such awesome heels, and I think it's a mistake to turn her heel. So I hope they don't let the chance turn her heel, because, like I say, she's better as a heel. But as far as the match, I think it'll be okay. Okay, I'm wondering if, you know, the experiment's over and if they're just going to give the title back to Nikki. But we'll see what happens. But I'm sure Rover will be tweeting 1,000 tweets during the match about how bad Charlotte's chops are and how she's not a good athlete, and tweeting at Dave to answer why he thinks she's so awesome when she's not. So if the match isn't entertaining, Twitter will be entertaining with Rover losing his mind.
I'm just tired of all this three-team stuff with all these women. I just, you know, like some one-on-one without all this Charlotte and Becky. And they don't know if Paige is with them or against them. I don't know what's going on there. That's my schizophrenic booking I've seen in a long time. You know, and they showed that video of the match from the NXT show with Sasha, you know, and they were showing highlights, and she was, like, the most over person in the building. And then they go back to it, and she's part of the Team Bad, and it's just like she's any other person on the show when she came over to the star.
Yeah, and it always seems like it's like they want to push her, but they can't help but push Naomi is ahead of her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's just like some other person.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, it's been the Revolution, big disappointment. Hopefully one day they'll get it on track, or at least we have NXT.
Then you have Kevin Owens versus Ryback for the IC title. I don't see any change here. Kevin Owens should keep the title.
Yeah, I mean, it's better to keep it on Owens. He's such an awesome heel. And he's one of the few guys that hasn't been killed by having that title. You know what I mean? He's actually somewhat strong. I mean, he had his little losing streak there for a while, but they've kind of made him strong. And everyone's talking about that pop-up powerbomb that he gave Mark Henry and talking about how impressive it was for Kevin Owens. But I think a lot of people are missing the boat, and you got to give Mark Henry a lot of props for that, because
he
helped
go
up for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget he can slam dunk a basketball. I mean, he there was a lot of him involved in that, and that was so impressive because he got so fucking high. Yes, I mean, I thought he got like 2 feet higher than I thought he could, or so, you know what I mean? So, props to Mark Henry for that spot. It wasn't all Kevin Owens, but I think this will be okay. You know, Ryback has his limitations, but Owens is smart enough to work around that, and, you know, make it a comedy match if he needs to, and at the same time keeping it like you know, an intent. So it'll be good. Kevin Owens, he's good enough to get a good match out of the right back.
Then you have a Big E and Kofi Kingston, the Dudleys for the tag team titles. I know it seems like they might do a challenge here because the way they've been feuding. I don't know.
I just hope they don't do the same ending where Xavier interferes and then gets split through the table. I mean, I would prefer the New Day wins, but if the Dudleys win, I hope it's not like that.
Well, it has to be leading to a tables match sometime, so they've got to be having another match, right? Maybe a TLC or something?
When is TLC? Is that coming up soon?
That's December.
In December? Yeah, it'll probably be the Dudleys winning then, and then, like, the New Day winning back at the TLC and putting the Dudleys through the table. That's what I...
Yeah.
Because if the Dudleys don't win it now, then they fail too many times, so it won't mean nothing for them to do it at the next...
And they just got beat on Monday night, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to give it to the Dudleys, you should do it as soon as possible. So if they are going to win, yeah, they should do it here and not at TLC. But, you know, New Day's fucking one of the best acts that they got, man. They're so awesome.
Then we have the U.S. Open Challenge with John Cena defending the U.S. title against We Don't Know. So
it'd be awesome
maybe
Taylor
somebody
Breeze.
New here.
It'd be awesome if it's Taylor Breeze and he wins. That'd be cool.
Yeah, because John Cena's supposed to be leaving after this show for, like, until December, so.
Yeah. And I thought that they'd have him visit the Dolph and they'd make Dolph heel after like that missed super kick and stuff. But since they brought in, Breeze, they kind of feud with, or at least, you know, they started him off with Ziggler. So it seems like they're keeping Ziggler face. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think Ziggler makes sense anymore, but I think Breeze, this would be a great opportunity for him to get a big win. You know what I mean? High profile win right off the bat.
They have Roman Reigns against Bray. Wait, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, where they could do something where it's like Cena and Breeze and Ziggler to get revenge, tries to interfere, but he fucks up and he's the one that super kicks Cena, leading to Breeze getting the win. So you can still turn Ziggler heel, and then when Cena comes back, he could go after Ziggler. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they could do that.
But Roman Reigns against Bray Wyatt in a Hell in a Cell match. I figured Roman Reigns has to go over here.
Yeah, he has to go over, but I don't like that this match is also in the Hell in a Cell. Because to me, it bastardizes it a little bit from the main event. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it should have been something else. But yeah, Roman should have to win. It'd be nice if this feud would end because, goddamn, these guys have been going at it for fucking ever. The thing with Roman,
it seems
is
like
they've
been feuding since like the Money in the Bank pay per view. But I don't know, the feud hasn't seemed like a feud that leads to the Hell in a Cell match. I guess I don't know. It hasn't been that intense, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm sure it'll be good, but. We'll see, and then a lot of it depends on how the audience reacts to Reigns. Because, you know, sometimes they cheer him, sometimes they hate him. So, I don't know. The way they've been pushing him, it just doesn't work for me. And hopefully they can figure it out or whatever. Because he is young, he's going to be there for a long time.
Some hocus pocus stuff with the other two or other three Wyatts, so there's three of them. There's three more of them now. With Eric Rowan just randomly showing up the other night in the mask, like he'd been there all along.
Right.
Then you have Seth Rollins versus Kane, the WWE title against Kane's job. God, I hope Kane loses.
Yeah, because I'd hate for Kane to be. I love Kane, the Kane character, but, you know, he wouldn't be a good champion, especially now that everything's kind of, the ratings are down, everything's kind of down. I would definitely keep Rollins as a champion, and I'm sure he'll get a good match. I mean, Kane's decent, and then Rollins is so good, you know, he'll get a good match out of him.
And Rollins needs a win. Shit, they have him lose so damn much on TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that is true. It was funny because he won this week, but even though he won, Brian still had a rant about how many times he had lost or whatever.
And he got Brock Lesnar against the Undertaker Hell in a Cell match. I think Brock has to go over here, unless somebody big is interfering to lead to something at WrestleMania or something else.
Yeah, I mean, in the perfect world, Stone Cold gets involved, screws over Brock, Undertaker wins, and then you can have Brock versus Austin at WrestleMania. That would be awesome. Or The Rock. That would be also awesome. But if it's not either of those two guys, then Brock should definitely win. And I'm sure they'll do enough smoke and mirrors to where they'll make this match really good. And it should be fun. I'm not super excited for the show, but I have a feeling it's going to be good though.
Yeah, I like it. Anytime I can see Brock Lesnar work, I always like to watch him. So
yeah,
it should be good. I never thought that they were serious about the whole Brock Lesnar Austin thing, because I just don't see Austin going in there and taking all those suplexes, and since that's Brock Lesnar's gimmick and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But same thing with The Rock. The Rock, you know, the movie people are definitely not going to want The Rock to get suplexed 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he kind of has that going against that negative thing going against him with both guys as far as his gimmick, as far as suplexing everybody. So we'll see what happens. Probably going to be a three-way between Rollins, Reigns, and Brock.
I still want Brock to go through the Rumble from number one to number and just kill guys for an hour.
That would be my match of the year. That would be so great if he went in number one and just killed everybody.
Yeah, just having kill dudes for like an hour every 2 minutes for an hour or something like that. I mean, that'd be awesome.
It could be like you know how like on the Royal Rumble from San Antonio where Austin went on that run and he just got rid of all the jobbers, like, you know, before Road Dogg was Road Dogg and shit like that. You know, he just boom, boom, boom. You could just have Brock fucking, they get in the ring, suplex, suplex, F5, out. Next guy comes in, suplex, suplex, F5 out, you know, and just do that, rinse and repeat over and over again for all the lower guys. It'd be awesome.
Did you check out that podcast Monday night?
I didn't get to see it all because a few minutes after it started, I had to drive to work, so I listened to at least 50 minutes of it, I think.
Oh, when they didn't talk about any wrestling, just trucks and food and hunting and stuff like that. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. You never see like long interviews with Brock Lesnar, so it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was probably the longest interview I've ever heard with Brock Lesnar. And he's
you can tell he doesn't love the wrestling business. He just does it for a job. And I think some people don't like that for some reason. I don't know why. Shit.
Mm-hmm. I also like the interviews where it's not just about the wrestling and, you know,
mm-hmm.
like the truck stuff, the hunting stuff. Like when we've had Dave, and we had Dave just talk about wandering around Japan and just pointing at something on the menu because he doesn't know how to read Japanese and just taking his chances on what he ordered. I love hearing shit like that. So that's what I liked about the interview and stuff.
He doesn't like being around people. He doesn't like to see his neighbors. That's why he's got his big fence, and he lives way out in the woods or something, or in some plantation or something like that, you know. He just likes to be by himself.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's pretty good.
So, so that should be good. We got about 15 minutes. I'm going to throw out the plugs already because I forgot last week. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can also download the stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. Check out angrymarks.com. You can also get us at iTunes at keyword angrymarks. You can also listen to our show at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrera and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
Yeah, you can go to youtube.com/Cotrera. I've got a bunch of wrestling videos up there. And I've got a playlist with about 64 episodes of Smoky Mountain, and I just got up to when Kevin Sullivan spiked Brian Lee in the head like 3 times with a spike. You remember that?
Yeah.
He fucking destroyed him. It was awesome. I love watching all that old stuff. So.
And you can follow Craig at Proper Jam, at Proper Jam, and I watched one of his Periscope videos from before the show on Tuesday, and I thought it was a dumb idea at first, but I gotta say I turned the corner on it because he was Periscoping Brian going on a rant, and then he turns it to himself and he just shook his head in disgust, and I popped for that. That was awesome.
Like, look at what I have to deal with every week.
Exactly. So, yeah, I got to give Craig, I give Craig hell, but I got to give him props for that. That one moment in Periscope was just awesome.
So, did you see the new Star Wars trailer?
Yes, I did. I love it because they don't give you shit as far as you don't know what the hell's going on.
What's going on, but they make you want to see it.
Yeah, like you really don't know what's going on. You know it's a battle of good and evil, but you don't know what the fuck's going on.
I basically know that the black guy's like, he used to be a stormtrooper. He got stranded on the planet when his TIE fighter went down. I can tell that pretty much. And it's probably where he meets the girl. And they meet up with Han and Chewie. And there's no Luke there because they're saving Luke for something special, I guess, for the big reveal with Luke. They haven't shown any of him. So.
He's not on the poster, but if you look at the poster, if you really look close at the poster, there's somebody behind Leia.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you look very close, you won't see it. But there's something there. I'm glad that they're not showing anything of Luke because it'll just be a total surprise when the movie comes. I mean, the trailer.
Yeah, you don't know if he's good or bad or what's going on with him.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah. And some of your redneck relatives are protesting the Star Wars movie because they are making it all about the black people.
Oh, fuck off.
Well, there are people who are, like, going to boycott, that are saying they're going to boycott it because they're mad that the lead character
is
black.
Well, they can boycott. I'm sure they'll make their money from it. You know, it's going to be a big fucking deal. They're still going to make $1 billion eventually. Or something like that. So.
Well, goddamn, it's already sold out for 2 weeks, and it don't open for over 2 months.
I know. I'm excited. I don't go to the movies that much. I think the last movie I went to see was like Godzilla last year. Cause I'm a big Godzilla fan, but Star Wars, I'm definitely going to see. I probably will wait a couple of weeks, you know, just to. I had a friend in college who went and camped out for tickets. I don't love nothing that much.
I don't like being in packed theater, so I usually don't go like the first couple of days, and then I'll go like maybe the second showing in the morning or the early afternoon. You know what I mean?
I try to go like in the afternoon, like during the like maybe during the school season or something. You know, when you can just go in there and sit and not to worry about but I'm gonna have to. I don't know how I'm gonna end up seeing it because I know my nephews are coming. And my niece, and they're going to want to go see it, pick them for Christmas, so, and see how that goes. I don't relish going to any big packed theaters. I'm not that kind of person. I don't like the big I am going to make my way out to see it, though. I'm very excited for it. About the trailer was awesome. I watched those reaction videos on YouTube. Like, it's cool watching hot chicks reaction videos to Star Wars trailers. I don't know why. It just is. Go watch those.
That's fun.
And I got up to, I'm on season 4 of Game of Thrones. This fucking show is brutal.
It is. What's going on season 4? I'm trying to remember.
We started season 4 and just into the 3rd season when, you know, they had, when they killed the Starks at the wedding.
Yeah.
And that was like fucking blew me away. I was so fucking shocked at that. I mean,
that's when everybody lost their shit about that one. They lost their shit about that one, and then there's like a rape scene. Well, I guess it's a rape scene, but it was like a guy who was married to his wife who wasn't like protesting, even though she didn't want to be. and people lost their shit about that. But it's funny because there's so many rapes that happen the first couple seasons.
Yeah.
You know, so it's weird.
It's
people
like,
lose their
there's
mind.
Not hardly anybody to like on the show, I've noticed.
I like the midget.
Yeah, he's the main one I like, and I think I also like I like the little girl.
Yeah, the little girl because she's a badass. I like
and
when she killed the. I guess you saw the scene where she like after the wedding where they saw those guys who were like bragging and she fucking just went up to that dude and just started shanking him in the fucking throat. That was fucking awful.
I was ready for this awesome scene because she had just arrived. Or they had this wedding, and I was thinking, okay, we're going to get this big reunion, and then it's just like this fucking massacre. And the most liked person that I've liked on the show so far, he got beheaded in the first season. It was
That's what really shocked me was because they totally made it up to be like this whole series was about Ned, and then they fucking kill him right off the bat. But have you got to the battle? The big battle at the wall?
I don't think so. Are you talking about the ice wall?
I
don't think I've gotten there yet.
Okay. That's a really great episode. And then that's when I really started to like Jon Snow. He's been very bland. He's been like, he's there, but he's very bland. But to me, he kind of, I liked him more after this. You know how, like, the big cliffhanger isn't really... Well, I shouldn't say the cliffhanger, but usually, like, the last episode is where all this shit happens, but they're doing it, like, let's say there's 12 episodes, the 9th episode or 10th episode where everything happens. It's like that on... It's like that on this season or the next season. I'm not too sure, but it's great because it's like a 45-minute battle, basically. And they switch from, like, the different characters... in their going, you know, having their battle and stuff. It's real awesome. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think the biggest battle up to now was when they had the big battle at King's Landing.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're still like a season away then from that one. Yeah.
And that fucking that little son of a bitch, I just want to punch him in the fucking face.
He was a great heel. He was fucking awesome. Fucking, he could have been having sex with prostitutes, but instead he wants to shoot him with a bow and arrow and shit.
I know, that's it. Okay. I said it like a couple seasons before that, but then I saw that and said, okay, this dude's got to go at some point.
Okay, have you seen it? Have you seen his girlfriend?
The one that he's supposed to marry?
Yeah, Marjorie.
Not the one with the Stark that he got out of marrying her.
No,
right?
No. Not the redhead. Not the redhead. Marjorie, the one that's got the gay brother.
Oh yeah. I've seen. I know who you're talking about.
Okay. Have you seen pictures of Kermit the Frog's new girlfriend?
No.
Okay. look for a picture of Kermit the Frog's new girlfriend, and they totally based her on Marjorie.
Oh really?
You will lose. It's so uncanny how this pig Muppet looks exactly like Marjorie. But I do want to talk about one wrestling subject before we go. We got 6 minutes of live airfare. Are you familiar with the Barbie Hayden story that's going around right now?
I have no idea who that is, so no.
Okay, well, Barbie Hayden is a Texas indie women's wrestler. Pretty good looking, good body. She's a good worker, actually. She's one of the top workers here as far as Texas Indies, and she was NWA champion, and you know, she works all the promotions here in Texas, and she's gone other places too. Well, anyway, and she was also dating this one wrestler named Carson, and this guy Carson, if he was just a little taller, he'd be in NXT right now, because he's got the body, you know what I mean, he's got the look, and he's good. But they were a couple for a while. I guess they broke up. When I would do the Uncle Mike and Tom show, we'd always joke that they should give them like a cold tryout since they're a couple, you know what I mean? And give them like a look together. But I guess they broke up. But apparently she's decided to advance her career. And the way she's going to do that is she's going to move to Orlando. And the way she's going to move to Orlando is she started a GoFundMe to help raise money to help get her to Orlando. And so she did this. And I don't understand why she has had a tryout before. She's been looked at when WWE comes to Texas, because you know how they always do that with the indie guys. But you can't just go to Orlando and go to NXT. You know what I mean? And if you just went there to try and bug him to get a tryout, I think that would actually work against you as far as kind of being an annoyance.
They shoot people when they do that. They go boom.
Yeah, and then I think she probably thinks that, okay, they're starting a relationship with WWN Live, and she can work for Shine and maybe get her foot in there. But the thing is, there are so many girls that are better than her in the ring at Shine and better looking than her. It's like she's not going to jump. She's not going to leapfrog Santana Garrett. She's not going to leapfrog, you know, the other Orlando girls. And most of the Orlando girls, I know them, like, you know, Mia Leva, and Sue Young and a few other ones. And the majority of them, and not all of them, but the majority of them all have full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. So you got this girl who's going to be in competition for a spot with them, who's asking for money on GoFundMe when they're, you know, busting their ass working full-time besides doing all their jobs. So she's going to get heat off of the girls from that. And then she's getting, like, tremendous heat from a lot of the wrestlers for starting to GoFundMe. And then after she started getting a lot of heat, she made a post saying that, oh, I don't need any help to move to Orlando. It's just in case you want to help me, which is like kind of one of those shaky.
Don't need help, but you need help.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's getting it like Malaya Hasaka had a thing on either Facebook or Twitter, but she ripped her pretty bad, and a lot of other girls have, like, you know, they get pissed off because, I mean, it's one thing to push your wish list, like, occasionally, oh, here's my wish list link or whatever, you know, but it's totally different when you're like, give me $4,000 so I can go to Orlando, you know what I mean? And she's actually made, like,
when you're Tammy Fitch and have no shame.
Yeah. A lot of people are saying that that's what she should do, or she needs to raise money is fucking do the sunny thing or whatever, but she's taking, like, a lot of heat. I personally don't like, I talked about, I order these women's pay-per-views. I'll buy merch when I go see them and stuff. That's, you know, me wanting to help them out. It's a different story when someone's asking you to do it. You know what I mean? I don't like that aspect.
I don't have the nerve to ask for money on a GoFundMe to help me move. I don't know. It's just me.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's just like asking for handouts. You got to have an operation or something, okay, I can buy that. You need an operation, you know, like a year.
Or even if you totaled your car or something like that, I can see raising money for, like, car, even that. But that's probably, like, the lowest I'll go. But just to say, hey, I want to move so I can go to better my career, you know what I mean? That's a different story. And then when you go and say, well, I don't need your help, but if you want to help me, then it's like, really? Okay, you don't need my help, so why should I help you? You know what I mean? I'm sure there are a bunch of virgin dudes who have, because she has made a grand out of it. So I'm sure there are a bunch of virgin dudes who are feeling, oh, I'll give her so much money and maybe she'll, you know, be my special friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck they're thinking, but. You know, I just think it's kind of ridiculous, and it's like, you know what I mean? I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think she kind of, the bad team. I mean, and like I say, she's a good worker, and I've never really heard anything bad about her from before, but she opened herself to all of this, and, you know, she brought it on herself, basically.
Hey, I did go back and watch... I went back and watched all of Guardians of the Galaxy again, and it was pretty awesome, I have to say. So.
I told you. Batista's fucking awesome in that movie, dude, just playing that fucking straight man.
Yeah, I mean, everybody in there. I mean, he's got enough comedy to keep me into it, even though I don't know, you know, like the characters, and it's kind of, the whole universe is kind of goofy, you know, with all the different people. But still, it's very good, and... Yeah, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was pretty badass. But we're about to run out of light air for us. So we'll go ahead and end the show, and we'll be back next week, and hopefully Craig will be able to join us again. And he says he has a certain leader of the Dungeon of Doom's phone number, so maybe we can grace with the presence of a former devil worshiper on the show. It's funny that Craig's got a fucking devil worshiper on the show, hopefully.
Did he go into the dungeon where the water wasn't hot? You know, like
that would be awesome. I don't know if he did, but I'd love to see a periscope of Craig doing that. That'd be awesome. But hopefully that'll work out. Hopefully that'll work out. Craig will be able to pull that off. But until then, we'll be back next week, and we will talk to everyone then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix, shit! Let's go hook him up! I will dog you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is awesome. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.